nourish our children's minds. Local fruits and vegetables taste better because they are fresher, since nothing has to be added to them to keep them from spoiling. Eating locally is also better for our environment. It means that the food we eat had to travel a shorter distance to reach our tables. I know it's hard for some people to find local produce, especially people who live in urban settings, but I'm always happy to read that farmers' markets are on the increase. Once you taste the difference in local produce and can feel your own energy level rise, it's hard to go back to eating any other way. We're lucky to have our own small garden behind our house in Boston. Growing our own vegetables and herbs has been a wonderful experience for all of us, especially the kids. In the same way I began to understand the cycles of nature at my grandmother's farm, it's begun to dawn on Benny and Vivi that life doesn't just happen, that there's a process and a rhythm to everything on Earth. For a cucumber or a strawberry to grow, it needs sunlight, rain, fertile soil, and of course, lots of love and attention. Whenever Benny and Vivi have a friend from school over, one of the first things they do is run outside into the garden and pick and eat a baby cucumber or a cherry tomato right off the stem. Whenever they do, I'm reminded of my own childhood. It feels like a complete circle. Is there a better teaching tool than a garden? Having a garden has also taught my children about the challenges that face any living thing. We have a wonderful gardener who comes to help us, and Benny and Vivi like to help her place ladybugs on the plants so they can ward off predators. They understand how plants are endangered by voles or rabbits or the occasional deer that jumps the fence. As the children get older, they take more and more pride in helping prepare their own food and meals. They understand that the vegetables and herbs we grow in our garden play an important part in nourishing their bodies. They also understand that some of their favorite fruits, blueberries, strawberries, just aren't available sometimes because they're out of season. They hear how hard it can be for local farmers in the fall or winter, and the challenges of growing produce in a greenhouse, and how, say, a sudden heavy snowstorm or ice storm can cause a greenhouse roof to collapse. As a result, they are more understanding of the effort, commitment, and love that goes into being a local farmer. In the future, I'd like to learn more about botanical medicine, since some of the most powerful medicines available to us come from nature. Having grown up with a mom who made special teas whenever my sisters and I got sick, I've always been fascinated by the ways nature can cure us. I'm not against Western medicine, but on the rare occasions that I don't feel well, I always choose a natural medicine. If I get a fever, it follows that my body is trying to tell me something. Sometimes just sitting in a tub in room temperature water is a great way to bring my temperature back to normal. If I get a headache, I first drink a lot of water, and then I lightly massage some peppermint aromatherapy oil onto my temples. Even better is lying down for a short time, and usually my headache goes away. My own grandmother was something of a medicine woman. My mom told me that when anyone in her small village would get sick, they would first call my grandmother to find out if they could be treated with herbs, rather than going to the hospital, which was far away. If any of us girls had the beginnings of a cold or flu, she would make teas and put peppermint oil under the soles of our feet, cover them with socks, and send us to bed. When we had a cough, she would cut up an onion and place the slices in our room or pin them to our pajamas. Along with making sure we stay hydrated and get massive amounts of vitamin C, I do this for Benny and Vivi when they come down with fevers. In my experience, it works. A few times when the kids have had the beginnings of a sore throat, I've used a method I learned from my mom. I pour really cold milk onto a cloth, cover the outside of the cloth in plastic wrap, and arrange it around her throat. It's a little stinky the next morning, but Vivi's sore throats are usually gone. I have no idea why. Also, lemon is a natural disinfectant, so if anyone in my house is sick, I cut a lemon in two and leave it face up on the dresser next to the bed. In the winter, I also like making a tea out of Manuka honey, three or four chopped up lemons, and freshly grated ginger, especially if the kids or I feel the beginnings of a cold. And if one of the greatest lessons that nature can teach us is about the rhythm of the seasons, well, imagine what it's like being a Brazilian woman surviving a New England winter. 10 of them so far. If I had to choose between winter and summer, I wouldn't have to think twice. Nothing makes me happier than being barefoot and wearing light clothing. Having grown up in a tropical climate, I would naturally prefer to live where it's warmer, but I also love the beauty of the seasons in New England. Still, the winter can be tough. I don't get depressed because of the darkness, but I'm freezing all the time, and I'm a person who literally turns blue when I get cold. But once I learned that the secret to surviving cold weather is layers, sweaters, down jackets, ski pants, jackets, socks, gloves, leaving only your eyes visible, winter can be a beautiful, cozy time of year. I like to ski, too, which I've been doing regularly for about 4 years, though when I was learning, I spent most of my time on my butt. Benny and Vivi are already both better skiers than I am, and Jack flies down the mountain, which reminds me how good it is to start learning a sport, or for that matter, a language, as early as possible. Me, I still stick to the blue runs. I may spend the winter months dreaming of warmer weather, but Benny and Vivi, who were both born in Boston, love winter, especially going outside and making snowmen or snow angels, or having snowball fights. They're hardy New Englanders. Sometimes, even when I'm wearing 3 layers of clothing, I still feel cold, whereas Vivi, who's wearing only a sweater, tells me she's boiling. My favorite times in December and January are when it's snowing outside, but I'm indoors, wearing fuzzy sweatpants and cozy socks, sitting before the fire, reading a good book. But to be honest, that rarely happens, since I'm usually running around doing a million different things. Nature is beautiful and inspiring, no matter what season. She, nature, was also my inspiration when it was time for me to have my cubbies. Even their middle names are inspired by her, Rain and Lake. I'd always dreamed of giving birth naturally, at home. To me, it is the most peaceful, beautiful way for a child to come into this world. Ever since my twin sister, Pachi, got double pneumonia when we were 10, I've had a strong aversion to hospitals. The idea of giving birth at home not only felt natural and right, it also connected me to a deeper sense of power. It was about trusting my own body and my creator to bring a new life to the earth. It wasn't as though I was the first person to consider this idea. Until the 1900s, millions of women gave birth at home. When I was pregnant with Benny, though, many people reminded me that very few women today give birth at home. Well, I guess I was going to be one of them. A few years before I got pregnant, I met Myra, a very special young woman who was studying to be a midwife. Myra told me that unborn babies basically float in water inside their mothers, and that the gentlest, most soothing way for a newborn to enter the world was into water. That stuck with me. I knew after that conversation that I wanted to birth my baby in water. I told Myra that I would love to have her with me when I had my baby. A few months before Benny was born, I called Myra and said, "Are you ready? Let's do it." Some women, Myra told me, have given birth in the ocean, while others have given birth in a bathtub. I chose the bathtub option, an easy decision since it was December and the middle of winter in Boston. I began watching lots of videos that she recommended of women giving birth in the water. At first, most people around me, including Tom, thought the idea was dangerous. But my mom completely supported the idea and was with me when both my children were born. Tom and I were in Los Angeles with Jack during the off-season when I had my 4-month checkup with an obstetrician. The doctor told me it was too dangerous for me to have a home birth. He said that Benny was in an unusual position, my hips were too small, and the odds just weren't in my favor. He said it was probably best for me to schedule a C-section. And as I said, Tom wasn't enthusiastic about a home birth either. Only after I had him watch a half dozen natural birth movies did he finally agree. Or maybe Tom just didn't want to have to watch one more natural birth video. I told the obstetrician that I was going to have my children at home. My attitude was the same as it had been in middle school. I don't think you get to decide this. No one was going to talk me out of it. I began doing more research, and soon I found Deborah, a very knowledgeable midwife. She had attended hundreds of at-home births. She was also kind and loving, exactly the sort of person I wanted by my side when I delivered my baby. Deborah explained to me where Benny was in my uterus. She wasn't worried, and reminded me that I had no health issues, and that I was young and totally capable of doing this. She had no concerns, and was confident that I would have a successful home birth. My plan was to give birth in my bathtub, though I'd overlooked an important fact. I'm 5'11", and the bathtub was, well, not a whole lot bigger than that. I was in labor with Benny for 16 hours, and the last three I spent in the tub, as Myra, Deborah, Tom, and my mom continually replenished the hot water. Any woman who has given birth knows it is one of life's most overwhelming experiences, but the more intense the pain, the quieter I got. The whole process was unfolding between me, my God, and my child. Krishna Das was playing softly in the background, and I was surrounded by flickering candles. I closed my eyes and kept focusing on my breathing, knowing that with each contraction, I was getting closer and closer. As always, I had a purpose. I was finally going to meet this little being who I'd been carrying around in my body for 9 months. I would get to see his little face. My clear sense of purpose made my pain more bearable. My whole life I'd been praying to my guardian angels, but when I was giving birth, I went straight to God. When Benny arrived, I felt, but not for the first time in my life, that I was somehow outside my own body, experiencing the moment from two different perspectives. I could see myself in the bathtub, as if I were watching a movie, witnessing it from above, while simultaneously feeling a rush of energy as I kept breathing. I was watching my son be born from a distance, and yet at the same time I was totally in the experience of giving birth to him. I've always wondered exactly how that could be happening. Maybe it's because at that moment, the veil between the earth world and the spirit world gets thinner. I don't know. All I know is that it was magical. Vivi's birth 3 years later was slightly different. Having learned my lesson about the bathtub, I bought a birthing tub, almost 7 feet in diameter, which came with a water heater. It not only kept me warm, but it also gave me enough room to move around. Unless a woman is very small, I would recommend buying or renting a birthing tub. I gave mine to Myra so that other expectant mothers could use it. Once again, Krishna Das was chanting, and the candles were glowing. Tom was in the tub with me, and my mom, Deborah, Myra, and my sister Fafi were also in the room. I'm so happy that I was awake and conscious when I gave birth to both my children. Yes, the pain was sometimes hard to bear, but focused breathing helped lessen the pain. Giving birth to my children at home were the two most extraordinary experiences of my life. I'd made a decision, trusted myself that everything would work out, and it did. I am so grateful. I remember lying in bed with each of my cubbies right after they were born and thinking, nature is miraculous. Life is truly magical. And so are our bodies that can create life, and how incredible to feel an instant intimacy with a small being you have just met. I also noticed a new kind of strength within me. I felt like Kali, the Hindu goddess of time, creation, destruction, and power. A feeling of invincibility. I could chew rocks in half. I could split mountains in two. I could divide oceans. Kali is also linked with death. When a baby is born, A mother takes a step backward. A part of her dies. It was also the death of meanness, of ego, of me putting myself and my own needs first. Birth is a metaphor for many aspects of life because it takes much effort, and only after we have passed the test are we given a reward. In 2008, I funded and worked with my dad on a program dedicated to restoring the quality of the water in a small river in Horizontina. We called it Projeto Agua Limpa, or Clean Water Project. It was a very rewarding experience, not only because I got to work with my dad, but because it brings joy to my heart to know that we were able to create a meaningful, lasting change to that region where I was born. By regenerating the margins of the river, local people today have access to cleaner water. Recently, my family decided to expand our efforts, using what we learned with Projeto Agua Limpa to clean the Jacuí River, one of the largest rivers in our state. I'm thrilled to take on this new challenge with the hope that in the future, others will join this effort so that we can clean up more and more rivers in order to provide fresh, clean water for everyone. I hold the vision that we will be able to work together with local communities, which in turn will be empowered to care for and preserve natural resources. Our health depends on the health of our planet. When we hurt nature, we hurt ourselves. No doubt nature notices our lack of awareness and the countless ways we are abusing and destroying her, but she just keeps on giving. My wise friend, Noel, who maintains the trees in Ireland's national parks, once gave me a simple and profound explanation for what is happening today with nature. Any living thing that loses one-third of its skin, he said, suffers a high fever and is at great risk of dying. To date, our Earth has lost one-third of her skin. The trees, the soil, the ocean, and the biodiversity surrounding them. Yet instead of helping to grow and replenish what has been stripped away, we keep on pillaging and ravaging. Many people take the Earth, the food we eat, and the water we drink for granted. Many more believe we're entitled to take everything nature has to give. We're not. We all need to contribute to the future of our planet. This is our Earth, our water, our trees, our future. If we're going to continue to live on this planet, it's our responsibility to roll up our sleeves and do something to help. It's up to us to protect the Earth and save ourselves. We are the ones we have been waiting for. We need to honor the organism that supports us. Our future is in our hands. So please, be as useful as you can. Use the special gifts that life has given you to serve others and to make the world a better place. Remember, you and I and everyone who lives on this earth is a part of nature. And why are we here, if not to learn, grow, and help one another? Chapter 7. Take care of your body, so it can take care of you. Before I start this chapter, I feel I have to address something, but I'll do it fast because it makes me uncomfortable. I've been told that many women wish they had a body like mine. I also know that many people are curious about my diet. I must admit that I find all of this a bit strange. There are many things I really like about my body. I'm naturally athletic and proud of it. And many things I dislike, including my shoulders, which to date I've dislocated about 9 times each. Many women have said to me that they wish they were as tall as I am. My height in the end turned out to be a big advantage, modeling, volleyball. But it wasn't my choice to top out at 5'11". Especially when just trying to fit in as a teenager, it's hard to be unnoticed when you're a foot taller than most of your friends. The body I have is the one I was given. Remember, 4 of my sisters are about a head shorter than I am. And all the kale and coconut milk in the world won't make them taller. A lot of people seem to be under the impression that I follow a special diet or a special exercise plan in order to look a certain way. The truth is, when I was younger, I didn't have to do very much to keep my body fit. I am a model, after all. and my natural body type is leaner with smaller bones. But at 38, my metabolism has slowed, and today I am very thoughtful about what I eat. I have a healthy diet, and I exercise daily for a simple reason, so I can feel good. Remember the anxiety attacks I wrote about earlier? They were an incredibly motivating force in my life. If you've ever had one, you'll understand that you never want to experience another. My panic attacks were much more motivating than any pleasure I might have from standing in front of the mirror. I know that there is a lot of confusion about what people should and shouldn't eat. The internet, in particular, is a mishmash of information, a lot of it contradictory and confusing. Remember when eggs were great for you, but then they were terrible, and now they are great again? Who knows what to believe? In the face of eat this, drink that, no, wait, don't, wait, do. It's no wonder a lot of people throw up their hands. If all the experts seem to disagree about what's healthy and what isn't, we all just might as well eat pizza, hamburgers, ribs, bacon, chicken nuggets, ice cream, carbonated sodas, chocolate bars, and macaroni and cheese. Life is short. Why not spend it eating whatever we want? The thing is, we don't simply risk having a short life if we don't pay attention to what we put in our bodies, but we become vulnerable to illness and unhappiness. My panic attacks completely transformed the way I ate. The first change I made was to cut sugar out of my diet for 3 months. That wasn't easy. My 90-day no-sugar fast ended in July, right around my birthday. I was born under the sign of Cancer, and we crabs like our food. I remember showing up at a studio to discover that some nice person had brought me a small chocolate birthday cake, my favorite. I wasn't planning to reintroduce sugar into my life, but the gesture was so thoughtful that I didn't want to be rude. When I ate a small slice, the first sugar of any kind I'd eaten in 3 months, I felt sick and disoriented. I could hardly focus for the rest of the day. My doctor had reminded me that sugar was in bread, pasta, juice, crackers, cereal, granola bars, sodas, energy drinks. Most processed foods contain a lot of added sugar. No wonder kids bounce off the walls when they eat a high-sugar diet. After my sugar cleanse, one little slice of cake made me so hyper. The episode really showed me how bad this kind of sugar is for me. Even after cutting out all types of sugar, caffeine, and alcohol from my diet, it wasn't until Benny was born that I began eating the way I do today. The knowledge that everything I ate or drank was passed to my baby through my breast milk, affecting his health, immune system, and energy, pushed me to refine my habits even more. I was no longer eating for just myself. For a while, I got a little obsessed with the nutritional content of my food, though I have relaxed about it over time. I will be the first person to admit that overthinking what you eat is almost as bad as not thinking about it at all. Once I began making healthy changes to my diet, the rest of my family came along. Making nutritional changes happens at a different pace for everyone. I've noticed this with my family in Brazil, my mom, my dad, my sisters, and their families. Once a year, we all come together for a family reunion, where the cousins can play and keep nourishing their relationships. We usually meet in Costa Rica. For years, I provided healthy food options. At first, there were just a few complaints. Some family members used to go to the local supermarket to buy extras so they wouldn't be deprived of their favorite snacks and soft drinks. This used to upset me. For only 10 days, can't we all just eat healthy food, please? But slowly, as the years passed and the family reunions continued, first some, then others began changing their dietary habits. And today, most of my family members are aware of what they eat and how much better they feel when they eat healthy foods. Today, I am so happy to see my sisters and their children eating good quality foods. At this point, we are constantly exchanging healthy recipes on our WhatsApp group. We also share natural remedies and health tips. These days, when we all meet up, There are no more complaints about the food, and everybody is actually excited about the menu. When choosing what to eat, I think about energy and balance. By energy, I mean maintaining my vitality, so that I can be my best both for the people around me and for the work I want or need to do. This doesn't just mean performing well, but also feeling healthy and thinking clearly. This process requires self-awareness. Will a particular vegetable, piece of fruit, cut of meat, or dessert give me the energy I need and want? Or will it make me feel tired and depleted? In my early 20s, when I barely ever thought about what I ate, I would usually eat a cheeseburger and French fries for lunch, and a big bowl of pasta with cheese for dinner. Afterward, the only thing I felt like doing was curling up in a ball and falling asleep. To bring my vitality up after a meal, I'd drink a cup of coffee with lots of sugar, and when the caffeine wore off, I'd have a second one or maybe a third. After so much caffeine, I would start to fall apart, both physically and emotionally. Now I'm aware that I simply can't afford to feel tired or dopey, much less anxious or crazed. Time is in short supply, and I hate wasting any of it. If I eat poorly, then I expend a lot of energy just trying to feel normal again. Why go there if I don't have to? As far as balance is concerned, Tom and I both live by the old saying, moderation in all things. My husband likes to say, too much of a good thing isn't a good thing, and too much of a bad thing is just plain bad. When you think about it, too much of anything, whether it's alcohol, caffeine, sugar, running, or sunlight, isn't good for any of us. This really is common sense. For example, once in a while, I might still drink one or two small cups of coffee, usually if I'm flying overnight and then going directly to a studio. The difference is that now I understand that caffeine is a powerful upper, and I treat it as such. On special occasions, I might have a small piece of cake, but when I do, I know exactly how my body will respond, and I know there will be a price to pay. Having said this, I do love sweets, but mostly I eat healthy desserts without processed sugar. Now that I have eaten a clean diet for many years, I experience the effect of sugar and caffeine as soon as I have any. When I began thinking about food in terms of whether it gave or took away energy, I started to become more aware about what to eat or not eat. I don't call my nutritional regimen a diet, but rather healthy eating habits, so I can maintain a high level of vitality and the mental clarity to have a productive and enjoyable life. These same attitudes motivate my morning exercise. I don't work out only for the sake of losing or maintaining weight, but for a clear mind and an energized body. When I exercise daily, I feel less stressed. Plus, my energy level increases, so I can accomplish all the things I want to do. When I first met Tom, he mostly ate the food commonly served at his football team's cafeteria. Heavy-duty guy food. But he was beginning to make a shift to healthier food, snacking on nuts and grapes. A few weeks after we met, Tom and I and his friend Kevin met for dinner at what was then my favorite place to eat in New York, a raw, organic, vegan restaurant on Irving Place in the East Village. Most items on the menu were made out of dehydrated cashews. As usual, I ordered a large salad with different kinds of vegetables and seaweed, with seed crackers on the side. "Do they have steak here?" I remember Kevin asking. When Tom was done eating, he wanted to know when his food was coming. It was kind of funny seeing these two big guys so confused about what they were eating. But the good news was that they both left the restaurant feeling satisfied, and it also became one of Tom's favorite restaurants in the city. In 2008, Tom suffered an ACL injury in the first game of the season. He decided to have his surgery in LA in order to be close to Jack, who at the time was only a month old. It wasn't an easy recovery, thanks to a series of staph infections. Tom was in bed for months. I met a caterer on a photo shoot who delivered delicious, healthy, organic food to the set. I asked him if he would be interested in working for us. He agreed and started delivering meals to our house 3 times a week. Once Tom started eating clean, delicious, organic foods, he felt much better, and it wasn't too hard for him to give up his old diet. We both decided that we wanted to keep eating this way, even after we returned to Boston. We both felt stronger, more energized, and mentally sharp. I may have been the one to introduce Tom to a healthier diet, but since he's so dedicated and disciplined about being healthy, our preferences came together naturally. Now our family's diet has evolved to be a whole food, plant-based diet that ideally emphasizes organic and local ingredients, including raw or lightly steamed vegetables, fruits, legumes, and whole grains, with the occasional small piece of meat or seafood added into the mix. The south of Brazil, where I grew up, is an area of the country with lots of plantations and ranches for breeding cattle. Growing up, I was a typical gaúcha, a southern Brazilian girl who ate meat almost every day. Many years later, on 2 separate occasions, I tried to become a vegetarian. I love animals. It really bothered me that I ate them. The first time lasted nearly 1.5 years, but I became extremely anemic, despite eating lots of beans, lentils, and chickpeas to make sure I got enough protein. My fingernails got flaky, and when I examined the skin beneath my eyes, it was white instead of rosy pink. Even iron and B12 supplements didn't help, and I felt tired all the time. When I told my doctor about my symptoms, he suggested that I reintroduce meat into my diet. This was not what I wanted to hear. 2 or 3 years later, I made my second attempt at becoming a vegetarian. I thought I could do it since my diet only contained a little meat. I lasted only 10 months, and then I got anemic again. Whether it has to do with my blood type or my body type or what, I'm still not quite sure, but I now accept that a vegetarian diet doesn't work for me. Currently, I eat meat 2 times a month and seafood 1 time a week. I pay careful attention to the source of my meat and the types of fish I eat. Ever since my doctor explained to me that larger fish, like tuna and swordfish, contain greater concentrations of mercury, we make a point of eating smaller fish. I also love to cook. I used to cook all the time, in fact. Before I was married, my sister Fafi stayed with me in New York for 4 months. Every night when I got home from the studio, I made us dinner. After all, I feel like I'm Fafi's second mom. Today, my schedule is a lot busier and I need to prioritize, which means I don't often cook meals, but occasionally I do make time to prepare healthy desserts. We are incredibly lucky to have Susan, who comes to our house 5 days a week to prepare wholesome meals for the whole family. The kids love being with her in the kitchen, helping out, and learning from her talent and tricks. With my mom living so far away, it's wonderful for Benny and Vivi to get to spend time with Susan. She's loving and nurturing, and her food is always healthy, nutritious, and delicious. Susan is also devoted to composting and eating seasonally and knows a lot about farming. She even helps the kids plant vegetables and herbs in our garden. Having learned that bees are dying because of pesticides, we decided to get 2 hives. We either use fresh honey or dates when we want to sweeten things. I've read that using local honey can also help relieve allergies. Most of our family's desserts are a blend of avocado and coconut. To my mind, those are the very best fats we can have. Whether we make ice cream or a mousse, and if I'm trying for my favorite extra chocolatey taste, we use a combination of avocados, bananas, and 100% raw cacao powder, which creates a very creamy, delicious base. As I wrote earlier, after oil pulling and meditating, I begin my mornings by drinking a glass of lukewarm water combined with 1/2 lemon. A 1/2 hour later, as I'm making breakfast and putting together Benny's and Vivi's school lunches, and if I haven't finished off their breakfasts, I'll drink a glass of green juice. Usually it's a blend of celery, cucumbers, 1/2 red or green apple, turmeric, ginger, lemon juice, and occasionally kale or beets. If I'm having my period, I'll often just do beets and lemon for extra iron and vitamin C. If I plan on doing a heavy workout, I make myself a smoothie using either fresh or frozen berries, a spoonful of cacao powder, hemp seed, flax seed, chia seed, and a splash of coconut milk. Sometimes I add a banana or a spoonful of homemade almond butter or protein powder. I also take vitamins and carry a small pack of them with me whenever I travel. In general, I'd rather get my vitamins from the actual source, food. But I take vitamin C, a B multivitamin to protect against fatigue and possible anemia, and vitamin D to protect my bones. I also get acupuncture and an intravenous shot of vitamins, including C, B12, and magnesium, from my doctor in Boston twice a year. I usually do it before the winter starts, when we're all more prone to getting sick. Twice a week, I make a point not to eat anything until lunchtime, even if I am working out. I always feel incredibly energized from this mini-fast. It takes a lot of energy for our bodies to digest the food we eat, and I think it's a good idea to sometimes give our digestive system a rest. There has been a lot of information written about the benefits of fasting. I especially find that a liquid fast helps me when I get sick, when my body wants just soup or tea. I occasionally devote a month a year to going completely sugar-free, which includes fruit sugar and the sugars from any grains or alcohol. I'm also a big believer in small portions, especially as I get older. A lot of people believe that in order to get strong and healthy, we need to eat lots of food. The opposite is true. Eating smaller portions won't overwhelm our digestion or exhaust us. When I was growing up, my mom told us never to leave the table until we'd finished all the food on our plates. She reminded us how fortunate we were to have food, and that many people in the world have none. For years, I felt guilty whenever I left even the smallest piece of food on my plate. I would eat until there was nothing left, leaving me feeling stuffed and exhausted. Today, I just serve smaller portions that I know will satisfy me, without leaving me feeling overfed or tired. I also feel lighter, more vital, and ready to tackle the day. Food is meant to energize us, not make us fall asleep. That's why my lunch typically consists of a salad with seed crackers and avocado, or a bowl of soup containing chickpeas and many different vegetables. Another favorite lunch, especially in the summer, is homemade spring rolls with tahini sauce for dipping. Spring rolls are easy to make. I combine one or two slices of apple and avocado, chopped cabbage, and some shaved carrots and cucumber, and roll them up in a sheet of rice paper. Two or three rolls are usually enough to satisfy me. They're light, perfect, and delicious, especially with the sauce. I can literally drink tahini sauce. It's so good. Despite what you might have read about how we eat, our family isn't 100% dairy-free. I happen to love eating goat cheese and sheep cheese, though I've stayed away from cow dairy ever since I had a test that showed I have an intolerance to it. I either drink coconut milk, which we make at home, or almond milk or hemp milk. Those are the three favorite milks in our family, with coconut being mine. When friends come over for dinner, I often serve a platter with cheese, nuts, and a little honey on the side. Not 5 pounds of cheese, mind you, but a small portion. A midnight moon, a manchego, and maybe some cashew cheese. I think it's difficult to deprive yourself of something you love, and I happen to love cheese. I just eat it sparingly. Likewise, we are not strictly gluten-free, just mostly. If we do eat wheat, it is organic and whole grain. At home, we cook pasta maybe once a week, usually rice pasta or quinoa pasta, which I think tastes better than wheat pasta anyway. And we all love it when Tom makes his special gluten-free pancakes on the weekends. By now, you probably realize that I'm not too strict. That might be why I'm such a big snacker. During the day, you'll usually find me with a handful of almonds toasted with herbs, or, my favorite, pumpkin seeds. I also snack on sunflower seeds and, my obsession, dark chocolate. If my husband's first love is football, mine is dark chocolate. I have chocolate every day, even if it's only a bite, and if I have PMS, it's going to be way more than a bite. After lunch, I always eat a small dessert, usually something with coconut or, again, dark chocolate, though not often at night, since the caffeine in chocolate can make it hard for me to sleep. The favorite snack in our house is hummus with chopped up celery, carrots, and cucumbers for dipping. It's usually what we offer to friends when they visit or bring to a get-together at Benny and Vivi's school. I don't drink alcohol very often, but when I do, I like a glass of red wine, two at the most on special occasions. If I'm on holiday and it's summer, I might have a margarita. I'm not against drinking, but mostly I don't like the way it makes me feel the next day. Since I have been eating a clean diet and don't drink often, my tolerance for alcohol has become quite low. I crave different foods depending on whether it's the fall, winter, spring, or summer. Tom and I are members of a local community-supported agriculture, CSA, farm outside of Boston. The members receive a box of whatever vegetables and fruits happen to be in season. In the late fall, for example, we get a ton of squash, which also means we eat lots of it during that time of the year, prepared in a variety of ways. Nature is intelligent. She tells us what we should eat and when we should eat it. When I first moved to Boston and tried to adhere to a mostly vegetarian or vegan diet, I went to bed at night freezing, even with the heat cranked up high. But then I learned to listen to my body. During the colder months, I longed for hot soups and stews, root vegetables, and richer, heavier foods that helped to keep me warm. In the summer, a heavy soup or stew sounds, well, a little heavy. In warm weather, I eat more salads, fruits, and vegetables, as well as more raw foods, partly because they are nourishing and cooling, and partly because there is such an abundance of them at that time of year. The truth is that locally grown produce just tastes better because it's fresher. Nothing beats the sweetness of a strawberry in June, even if Tom would disagree with me. Energy, getting more of it, is also the main principle behind my morning workouts. I'm someone who loves using my body, whether I'm doing yoga, skiing, or trying to, surfing, biking, horseback riding, kickboxing, or dancing, which is one of my all-time favorite activities. I've also had an interest in martial arts. It may be a form of fighting, but I also find it beautiful. I'm a big fan of Bruce Lee. He had a remarkable focus, dedication, and body awareness. 5 days a week for almost 7 years, I practiced kung fu as well as sword and stick fighting in Boston with Yao, an amazing instructor from China. I even practiced during both my pregnancies. The best part was that I could see how much better I was getting every day. Tom used to call me Jis Lee. Currently, I enjoy doing a variety of different exercises. The most important word in that sentence is enjoy. Unless I'm sick or traveling, my morning workout is always part of my routine. I approach exercise the same way I tackle everything else in my life, with 100% of my focus and dedication. Whether I'm doing yoga, bands, or dancing, my approach has less to do with wanting to be the best and more with wanting to give my best. I think about it this way. If I take the time to exercise, I want to make the most out of that time. What's the point of doing anything halfway? Whether I'm working out for an hour, which is ideal for me, or 20 or 30 minutes, it's all about presence, dedication, and intensity, no matter what I'm doing. When I'm in Boston, I usually go to Tom's gym, TB12, twice a week, and work out with resistance bands. Fafi and I might do a Pilates or even a dancing class in the sanctuary. I love exercising outside, especially in Costa Rica. I can be fully integrated and present in nature, while also doing good things for my body, brain, and spirit. When I surf, ski, or horseback ride, I don't ever feel like I'm working out. For me, exercise is like plugging myself into a high-voltage wall socket. In fact, I get depressed and on edge when I don't exercise, and my vitality diminishes. If we don't take care of our bodies won't take care of us. Our bodies are like vehicles. When I exercise and eat well, I'm helping maintain my vehicle so that it works well and doesn't break down. Some people exercise to get a great body. I exercise for sanity and clarity, too. Doing even 10 minutes of any type of movement gives me a significant increase of vital energy. I don't ever want exercise to feel like an obligation. I don't freak out about it or get crazy if I miss a day or two. Compulsive exercise can be as much of a problem as no exercise. If I go surfing, that counts as my workout, though when I get to shore, I'll cap my morning off with a few sun salutations, if for no other reason than to stretch my muscles that get tight on the surfboard. If Tom and I are out west skiing, and I get in only 30 minutes on the slopes, I might do some band work back at the house. If I'm doing a photo shoot in Brazil, I do yoga in my hotel room, around 30 minutes of hip openers, planks, bridge poses, and stretches. I go with the flow. Exercise reconnects me to my breath and my body. When I'm working out and being conscious of my breathing, exercise becomes another form of meditation. When I'm done, I feel revitalized. Except when it's not. Last year, for example, I tore my ACL skiing on the first day of a week-long vacation with the kids. I was frustrated that for the rest of the trip I had to stay inside with my leg up. For months, the most I was allowed to do was walk, and it took me a long time to get back to my daily routines. I now appreciate it more than ever when my body is feeling good, and I understand how important it is to take really good care of it so that I can keep doing what I love for as long as possible. Being immobilized and not being able to exercise regularly was very tough for me and definitely made me a little low. It took patience, dedication, and consistency to recover fully. But today, I am so appreciative to have my body back feeling good, except my shoulders still need some work. There's something very satisfying about focusing on one type of discipline, say yoga or a martial art, every single day, over a long period of time. Not only do you get to experience your progress, but you're also able to go into the practice with greater depth. For example, when you practice yoga asanas with consistency and focus, they can become a gateway to spiritual understanding. Once again, it's about dedication. The more time and attention we give to something, the more we develop. But as with everything, self-awareness goes a long way toward letting you know what works well for your body. What's right for me might not be for you. My choice is to use exercise as a tool for creating inner calm and clarity. What is it for you? A way to find solitude on a long walk or connect with friends at a class? Are you a very high-energy person who needs exercise to ground yourself? Or do you tend to be sluggish and need a jolt? Your inspiration and vitality may come from some of the activities I love, or from something else entirely. Maybe you need a variety of activities that complement each other. I don't think it's any accident that Tom's favorite off-season sport is golf. No hitting, no running. Our bodies and the earth are the only two homes we have. How do you want your home to be so you can feel your happiest and best? Are you being loving and kind to yourself so you can ask for and receive the most from your body and mind? If you haven't given your body the attention and nourishment it needs, it's unlikely that it will give you back what you need. If you're considering making adjustments to your own nutritional regimen, my main recommendation is to avoid sugar and processed foods. Try to eat as much real and local food as you can. If organic food isn't an option, make sure you wash everything thoroughly. If you want to eliminate sugar or cut back on dairy products, take it slowly. Go step by step. See how your body reacts. If you have more energy as a result, you will be motivated to keep going. That's what happened to me. But don't do what I've heard some people have done and take on my diet as a challenge. First of all, my diet evolved pretty slowly in the face of circumstances. And second, you won't necessarily react to food the way I do. Having said all this, I love pizza. Some Saturday nights, when Benny and Vivi have friends over for sleepovers, we have pizza night. I try to keep this from being a nutritional disaster by focusing on the ingredients. The truth is, you can make a lot of your favorite foods, like mac and cheese, into pluses instead of minuses by altering individual ingredients. A good friend of ours owns a small chain of pizzerias called Desano, which uses high-quality Italian ingredients, and sometimes he sends us batches, which we prepare on those special Saturday nights. The ingredients are organic, and the pizzas themselves have very little cheese, typically burrata, buffalo mozzarella. They are so thin and crunchy, it's almost like eating focaccia. Of course, since I'm incapable of wasting food, I usually end up eating everyone's crusts with real French butter. You won't find me standing in the kitchen at 1 a.m. devouring ice cream, but once I start eating French butter, I just can't stop. Nothing compares to real French butter on a good piece of bread. We all need a guilty pleasure or two, or three, and real French butter and dark chocolate are mine, along with a tub of popcorn, please, on movie nights with Tom. By now, you might be wondering if our family's nutritional regimen is one that Benny and Vivi actually like, given that children are notoriously picky eaters. But the kids have been eating whole food since they were very young, so they are used to it, and they really like it. I suppose people tend to like that which is familiar. Why people born in England love Earl Grey, Australians love Vegemite, and South Brazilians drink erva mate. Our taste buds are primed to love what we know and especially what we knew growing up. Any vegetables my kids can eat raw, cauliflower, cucumbers, carrots, broccoli, they like, along with sliced cucumbers or carrots with hummus, with maybe a sprinkling of Himalayan sea salt on top. Of course, they also love pizza, pasta, and cheeseburgers, which they eat occasionally if we are traveling. But at home, we try to keep our diet as healthy as possible. If my kids have a taste for what they grew up with, that makes the reverse true as well. If you grew up eating cheeseburgers, French fries, and pizza, you'll grow up accustomed to salt, sugar, and fat. If you start eating healthier foods, at first the new taste might not seem as good in comparison because the salt, sugar, fat, and chemicals in processed food are missing. But believe me, you can change your reactions to food and develop an enjoyment of a new diet. And I'm living proof. For me, it was a matter of realizing how much better I felt and the joy of having more vitality. That said, there are a few ways to sneak vegetables into children's diets. My own mom used to chop up vegetables and add them to eggs, or she would make a chicken vegetable soup, which I still make when Benny or Vivi are coming down with a cold. You can warm vegetables up in a pan with a little bit of ghee, clarified butter, which I like to use for sautéing, garlic, and sea salt. You can dip them in hummus or nut butter or tahini sauce. You can turn vegetables into smoothies, and you can sneak them into stews, soups, or eggs the way my mom did. I have a friend who makes carrot cookies with organic oatmeal and a whole lot of shredded carrot. Her family loves them. Think about what you like and use your imagination. After dinner, I usually like to drink a cup of chamomile tea, and I make cups for the kids, too. Normally, I try not to drink anything, whether it's water, tea, or wine, while I'm eating. My mom always taught us girls that it's too hard on the digestive system. Basically, I drink whatever I want before dinner, and so do the kids, but usually not during the meal. When dinner is over, I wait at least 30 minutes before I drink liquids. and I'm going to repeat that I'm a big believer in smaller portions. It's really hard on your digestion to take in a lot of food all at once. Think about how you feel the day after Thanksgiving. My philosophy is that if you are still really hungry, you can always have more. I think when we slow down and eat a little more mindfully, it's easier to figure out when the tank is full. When I was single and childless, I used to go on 3 or 4 day silent meditation retreats where I would also be on a juice fast. What fascinated me was that after I was done fasting and began to eat solid food, the first fruit or vegetable I ate exploded in my mouth with flavor. I still like doing the occasional detox because I feel great after it. That said, I would not do a juice detox in the winter, only in the warmer months. Our bodies need as much energy and as many fats as they can get when it's cold out. And believe me, it gets cold in Boston. So I reserve any fasting for the summer months. Sometimes I'll drink only juices.